It's time for Twig this week in Google. Google made so much money on Friday, it gained two Ubers. Kevin Toefel will explain, and Ron Amadio will give his review of the new Android car. It's all coming up next on This Week in Google. Stay here.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 310, recorded Wednesday, July 22nd, 2015. Phi FOMO. This Week in Google is brought to you by Lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit Lynda.com/twig. That's LYNDA.com/TWIG. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Get $25 off the Ring Video Doorbell when you go to ring.com/twig. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial right now at ZipRecruiter.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from the Googleverse, but also social media in general, journalism, and a whole lot more. Jeff Jarvis is not here. He has the week off. I think he's probably traveling hither and thither. But of course, we have excellent fill-ins for him. Let's start with Kevin Toefel. He's been on the show before. You know him many years at GigaOM, now at ZDNet, where he's a contributing writer. It's great to see you, Kevin.
It's good to be here, as always.
And also regularly on Tech News Tonight. I almost forgot. And to my left, Ron Amadio from Ars Technica. Great to have you, Ron. He covers Android, right? It's mostly Android, right?
Yeah, Android, Google, whatever. You do others. I feel is interesting.
Whatever you like.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, it's good
I have to say, Ron is the writer that all the other Android writers read.
I agree. So,
good stuff.
If Amadio said, no, I'm completely with you, Kevin.
Thank you.
If Amadio says it, it's got to be true.
Well, it's gospel. Thank you.
Yeah, it's gospel. So, speaking of Android, I got my Phi. Got my Phi on. Jeff Jarvis and I had both been bitching that we'd asked for invites for months, and Matt Cutts happened to be on a couple of weeks ago before I went to Europe. I don't know if
you were able to publicly corner him.
Yes.
And demand an invite.
Precisely.
That's what it takes. Okay, good to know.
No, he says, I have nothing to do with Phi. And as you know, Matt's kind of on leave anyway. But he said, let me call somebody.
Nice.
And I'm assuming that's what happened, because both Jeff and I got invites about a week ago. We both already have Nexus 6s. In fact, I think the Nexus 6 was Jeff's daily driver. I had moved on to some more modern Android phones. Although, coming back to the Nexus 6, I realized what an advantage you have if it's pure Android. You know, I love the Galaxy S6 camera, but that thing has all sorts of problems because of the interface, the skin. Same thing with the LG G4. This is just a rock solid. It's giant, but it's a rock solid phone. So I'm kind of glad to go back. And I decided to make this a pure Google experience, not even use a different launcher. I'm using the Google Now launcher and the Google keyboard and all of that stuff.
Is it the same phone as the 6?
It is the 6. No? I didn't buy a new phone. This is the 6 I had.
Yeah, you can go to the Nexus system image page, and they have a download specifically for the Project Phi.
Oh, they
Nexus
do?
6, where you can just kind of flash your phone to whatever the Project Phi software.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay, so again, Ron Amadio, to the rescue.
But they should give you OTAs and stuff.
But I don't need that. I'm just using the 511 that was on this Nexus 6 forever, I put in a Phi SIM. So you get a kit. Now, you do have the choice of buying, not subsidized, but an amortized Nexus 6. They spread the payments out. But I opted just to get the SIM. So they sent me the SIM. came in a few days, put the SIM in here, and the phone, you know, almost immediately went from being T-Mobile, which is what I was using. You see, it says Fi Network, which isn't much of a surprise since it is, in fact, T-Mobile and Sprint that it chooses between. And there must be a way of knowing whether it's using T-Mobile or Sprint, but I'm not sure. Maybe that's in, I don't know, maybe that's in the AP, somewhere in the
APN settings,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, the APN settings is all I could think of. Let's mm-hmm. You know what? Let's check.
What are those when you rapidly switch between two different carriers?
Isn't that interesting? So and I think it's one of the reasons you can only do this in the Nexus 6 is clearly there's something going on. Here's cellular networks. Let's see.
Oh, yeah. They put special hardware in this for, mm-hmm. for Project Fi, which is why right. It's the only phone.
Which means that they knew about Fi
last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be any way of knowing you can turn on or off Wi-Fi calling, but that's kind of normal. And under cellular networks, there's only one setting, turn on or off data roaming. So I don't know where the APN settings would be.
Is it go back one, I think? Let's see. It's more.
That's where I was just looking at more.
You were in more?
Yeah.
Where did it go?
There's diddly. There's got to be APN settings somewhere because you got to be able to customize the APN settings.
Yeah, they're automatic now, so you really shouldn't have to mess with
it. Oh, maybe that's the case.
Yeah, no, if you go to cellular network, there's an access.
Where is that? Okay, cellular network?
More, and then cellular networks.
Right.
Yeah, I'll show you what I get on the Project Fi phone. Show them what I get on the Project Fi phone.
Yeah, wow.
They hit all the network.
They are hiding it, baby. Does anybody know what that? Does anybody know what that code is that you can enter that will show you the deep details?
Up down left.
Very good. That's it.
So Leo, you should be on build LVY48C for the newest Project Fi thing.
No, so I'm on LYZ28E. So it works fine. They didn't tell me I should get a new. They didn't tell me anything I should get a new or anything. Let me see if there's a system update. No. So you don't have to be on a special version of the operating system to do this. It's just I'm up to date, 5.1.1.
I would guess you're missing bug fixes.
Okay. Well, but they didn't say anything.
Yeah, that's weird. I don't know. Fi is weird. So, I don't have one. I have no idea. They won't send me one. So,
same here, Google.
Let's try the special code, star... hash,
really?
Star hash, 4636. Is it hash star or star hash? Well, they say
it's the opposite of
it's the opposite, isn't it? It's hash star.
No, it should be hash star, yeah.
Hash star. That's what I thought.
It's the check-in.
Yeah, it worked. Yeah. Phone information, battery information. So let's see. Phone information. I'm on the Fi network. Right. So this must be an MVNO thing because that's what they are, right? Is an MVNO. But they're doing something that no one I've ever heard of is doing, which is sharing between Sprint and T-Mobile, depending on which runs the best. And I can't see here anything that indicates which of the two I'm on.
You'd need to do a trace route. And,
it's HSPA.
And look up the IP addresses.
Right. HSPA is T-Mobile, right?
That's going to be T-Mobile.
Oh, that's T-Mobile. It's not CDMA. So it will go. It will fall back to CDMA, which is Sprint. So I'm on T-Mobile, but without, you know, unless you knew that that's what that meant, you wouldn't otherwise know. All right.
Okay, well, that's kind of the point, though, so that you don't know.
You don't know. You don't have to care.
Right.
It's just it says the Fi network. And then you do get, of course, a Project Fi kit, which I'll show you here. This is all free. And actually, and others have reported this. It's kind of cool. You get some special Project Fi headphones.
From mono to stereo, whichever sounds better.
Turn eardrum solos into eardrum duets, it says. Don't know what that means.
You can share. So it's you can share, two people could listen.
Oh, you're right. It's got a special connector.
It's a splitter.
It's a splitter.
Nice.
Look at that. Nice. That makes it really fit funny in your pocket. That's good. And by the way, these make excellent Tupperware containers. Yeah, isn't that wild? I didn't notice that. And it's the Fi color scheme, which is ugly as hell, is white. This is you also get a in-case case that says Project Fi on it. White with kind of iggy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, buttons, green and blue. You get the SIM, in my case. And they also give you, which is kind of cool, a Project 5 battery. It says, all natural juice for your phone.
Yeah, that's like the new swag that everybody gives out. It's battery. Like 10,000 of these stupid things now.
Yeah, let's see. Let's just out of curiosity. That's interesting. It has a little thing to hang it on the shelf with.
It's got to be a good 5,000, 8,000 milliamp hour battery.
Yeah, it's a crappy 6,000 milliamp hours. Yeah. I have a 20,000 that's this size. Come on, guys. That's all right. It's free, right? What are you going to do? It's free. And wait a minute. This looks like it has, yeah, it does, two USB connectors. That's kind of nice.
And they're separate amperages.
Separate amperages? Yeah. Well, output 1 amp, output 2.1. So it has a fast charge, which is good because the Nexus 6 does support quick charging. So you would want to use the 2.1 amp connector. All right. So that's the kit. I put in the SIM card. First thing it says is, do you want to port your Google Voice number over, or do you want a new number? Now, this is where it gets complicated. And
do you want to jump off the cliff?
Yes. So my advice to you, if you use Google Voice, I use Google Voice, and I thought, well, I'm going to be the guinea pig. We'll try it. My advice to you is to not use your Google Voice number because you lose many of the Google Voice features. The phone forwarding continues. So one of the main things I do with Google Voice is I use that as my number, and then I change phones all the time. And it's continuing to forward to three phones total. So that's good news. But the other thing that there are a lot of things that are very cool about Google Voice, one of which is you can have use your Google Contacts, group people, and give them different answering machine messages. You can change how the response will be. Some people you'll pick up on, some you won't. You can have screening. So that if somebody calls my Google Voice number, they have to announce themselves, and then I have to press 1 to pick up on it. All of that seems to have disappeared. In fact, it looks like all you really get is the ability to do, these are the settings, voicemail, call forwarding, service address, which is the 911 address, alerts. So it'll tell you on device or email if you go past the data that you agree to. And then call forwarding, I'm not going to show those numbers, but it forwards to two other numbers. So the big deal on this is that you only pay for the data you use. So it's, $30 for the voice and text service, unlimited texting, and then $10 a gigabyte for data. You say ahead of time, as I did, how much data you think you'll use. I said 5 gigabytes, but it's really irrelevant what you choose because you'll just pay $10 a gigabyte, whether you use 10 or 20 or 50 or 100 or whatever. And then they rebate you the difference, or I guess you give you a credit on the difference.
That credit goes down to like the penny as well. I mean, it's pretty detailed accounting of what you use.
You can see as you go. The other thing that's very cool is there's no extra charge for tethering, and the tethering just counts against your data. So this is a good this is a great MiFi device. International usage is the same as T-Mobile, so 20 cents a call and $10 a gigabyte, but limited to 256 kilobits per second. That's how T-Mobile works as well internationally. So they're obviously using the T-Mobile network for international usage. It looks to be even the same countries. So that's it. I mean, I have to say it's very clean. It's very simple. I presume they have good support. The phone support's estimated wait is 1 minute. Email replies with 1 to 4 hours. There's a Project Fi community on Google Plus, which I still can't get into. I think you need to get an invite to get into the community. but other than that, that's it. So, the real caveat for anybody who wants to do this, and I can see why you might want to do this, is that you should probably get a new phone number if you use Google Voice, because as far as I know, there's no way. I don't know if there's any way for me to go back. I think I've lost my Google Voice number.
So go ahead, Ron.
Is it a big difference? Do you care that much? It's just the billing thing is the reason you should care that much? I mean, it seems like a lot of effort on Google's part for not that huge of a differentiator.
You mean, so the price isn't that much better. It's kind of the service is the same as you're going to get from T-Mobile or Sprint in your area.
There's one big advantage, though. This also has seamless Wi-Fi calling transfer.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
But my T-Mobile phone does that too, by the way. So that's just this phone, in fact, did it with T-Mobile, as does the Galaxy S6. Any phone that can support Wi-Fi calling, when you're on T-Mobile, T-Mobile will say, oh, you're going to be using Wi-Fi if you make a call. And you can turn that off, but I've used it. The Wi-Fi calling is fun. And, yes, seamless means that if I'm on a Wi-Fi call and I get in the car and I tried this and I drive away, there's a handoff to the cell network and I continue the call without any interruption.
Yeah, to me, that's one of the biggest advantages for people who have challenging coverage areas, especially yes. in the house.
Yes.
You basically have a triple network there between Sprint, T-Mobile, and your own Wi-Fi.
Yes. Yeah, and if you were in an area that had good Sprint but not good T-Mobile, but then you work in an area where it's flipped, this would be a good choice for you. I think mm-hmm. that the data billing, while not necessarily saving you money, is sensible. And if you use tethering, I think this is a good deal for tethering. You don't have to pay extra for tethering.
So I have to ask, I mean, we talked about this just before the show. It seems to me that Google had a great thing with Google Voice, and it's dying a slow, painful death.
It's ignored.
I don't understand why, and I also don't understand why they couldn't integrate it better into this offering, because now you're losing features.
Yeah, well, remember there was always the rumor that they were going to kill Google Voice. Like for the last year, people kept saying with the merging of Hangouts and text messaging and all of that, that was the end of Voice. Maybe this really is the beginning of the end for Voice. It's not the end of the world for me, I know, but I kind of liked having different answering messages for different mm-hmm. people. I do like the screening. That I guess that's gone. And forwarding looks more like how you would forward your cell phone, except that you could forward to multiple numbers. It doesn't have that kind of additional feeling of like I can use different phones and so forth. And this phone now has my Google Voice number. That's the Google Voice phone. That's attached now to that SIM, which is also a change. So I think probably if you decide to go with Fi, and I think Fi is probably a good choice, if T-Mobile and Sprint are good in your neck of the woods, you probably would want to get a new number and continue to, I think you could continue to use Google Voice, have it call that number, right?
Yeah, you can mm-hmm. use Fi just like any other carrier number.
Yeah.
Sure, okay.
The other thing they suggest, and maybe you guys have an answer for that, they suggest you use the Google Messages app, not Hangouts, for your text messaging.
That's so dumb. Yeah. Mm. I mean, one of the best parts of Hangouts is getting Google Voice is getting, you know, your text messages on every single computer on earth. So
right.
How does that work
mm-hmm.
when you don't use Hangouts?
Right. Well, I think it still does it, which is really weird. So I started using Messages as my default text messaging, and it acted as if it was Google Voice. Do you know what I'm saying? So so text messages to the Google Voice number would end up being like Hangouts go to everyone.
I wonder if you would get duplicate messages then.
I went back to Hangouts. I thought
it's just very disorganized, and there's, you know, there's different groups that kind of have the same idea of let's do something different with your phone number, but they're separate and they don't work together. And it's very googly to do things that way. They always like to make multiples of everything. So
why are they doing Project Fi? What's in it for them?
I would hope it's like the Google Fiber plan, where it's like, it might have started out that way, where it was like, let's go be this internet service provider and we'll do things so differently that the competition will have to change. But I think Fi at some point got watered down more and more and more from, you know, MVNO rules and everything else, that it just kind of turned into this.
It's kind of a Me Too cell carrier. It's not vastly differentiated.
I'm sure they started with a very ambitious plan and it just never made it through however many committees to get here.
Yeah, I think you're right, Ron. And you know, Google has tried to upend the carrier market for some time. They started with the Nexus One and the plans have never worked out to, I think, what Google envisioned. And I don't think they're going to drive much change by doing this. So I'm a little lost on why they're really doing Fi, to be honest.
The one thing that kind of backs up your thought, Ron, that the MVNO deals might have been what diluted this, is that they want you to use Messenger or whatever it's called instead of Hangouts for your text messaging. Because Hangouts, I don't think, ever uses, or no, I guess it can use SMS, can't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they integrated that.
But Messenger is all SMS.
Right.
Does it ever use data?
No.
So I wonder if the carriers are saying, nah, we want you to use... I don't know. Why would they? Why? What would they care?
I don't know. I think you might end up with like a weird message duplication thing.
I'm not going to take a chance. So I made my default SMS app be Hangouts, and I haven't had any problem. It works fine. Well, there you go. There's a kind of a mini review of Project Fi. I mean, can't say anything negative about it. I've been using T-Mobile anyway, so it's exactly the same. Speeds are the same. Everything's the same. I traveled.
If you were Larry Page, you would demand 10x thinking. And this is definitely not like a 10x.
No, this is like 0.125 thinking.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem anything compelling.
And yet Ron and I still want an invite.
You do, don't you? It's scarcity, right?
Yeah, well, we're probably just completionists. Like, this thing came out, we need to try it. It doesn't matter if it's good or not.
It is our job, right?
Right.
Right now, you have to have a Nexus 6, either buy one if you don't have one or have one. I'm intrigued, Ron, that you say there's a special build for this. Because they don't, and nowhere do they mention that.
Yeah, sure. You probably should get an OTA. I mean,
you think I'll get an OTA?
Yeah, the Nexus devices have special carrier builds for all sorts of stuff. I've got the page open. There's T-Mobile, and then there's all carriers except T-Mobile, and then there's Project Fi only. So I'm going to guess because they have a special thing for T-Mobile that is like Wi-Fi calling or something.
I already had it because I was using this with T-Mobile.
No, yeah, but there's a different build for Project Fi.
Should I go out and get it? How do I get it?
It would be such a pain.
I don't have to root it and everything, do I?
You'd have to unlock your phone flash the new system image.
Presumably, they'll send me the new image at some point.
And we could get the image if we have a Nexus 6. Ron and I both, you have a Nexus, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But without the SIM, it's kind of useless.
The other thing that's kind of scary, if I go to voice.google.com, it redirects me to Project Fi.
Ooh.
So that's it. You're done. See ya.
You have abandoned us.
See ya. So don't do that. And now I have to do it again. I have to try again because now I have to see what happens if you don't kill your
The actual Google Voice site, the desktop website, is like a horror show now. It's like half of it is consumed by Hangouts, and it's like leave and go try Hangouts, and then the other half of it's Google Voice, and it's a big weird mess.
Yeah.
It still works if you toggle all your settings right. It's just super ugly, and no normal person would ever deal with this. Yeah.
It's actually up for me right now, and it does not redirect me to Project Fi. So, Leo, I think they voted you off the island.
I'm voted off the island. I'm gone. I'm history. Well, because I agreed to have my Google Voice number ported. Now, it ported for me in about an hour. But I've heard from some people that say it hasn't ported for them for days, which means, Alan Tepper, who sent me an email, said it's been several days. He hasn't been able to use his phone for anything but Wi-Fi. Yeah. So that's something to keep in mind if you're going to port. In fact, don't port your Google Voice number in any respect. It's a bad idea all around. All right.
They alluded to that too, but they really haven't been very clear on what happens. Obviously, we're finding out now. But
they're stuck, though. They can't kill Fi. I mean, right? People bought phones to use Fi. They're stuck.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you don't see too many MVNOs go out of business. They tend to get bought and subsumed.
Yeah, nobody's going to buy it from Google.
Nobody's going to buy a hybrid network.
I don't know.
MVNO.
All right. Google has announced its second quarter 2015 earning results. This was last Friday. It feels like old news now, but it's been since we last gathered for This Week in Google. And the stock market celebrated on Friday. I saw like a huge, huge bump in the value of Google. I think it went up more than $60 billion, right?
It was the largest, wasn't it like the largest stock market gain by any company ever for like a single day?
In a single day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Stunning. And it was only an 8% growth. It just shows you how big Google is. Revenues, $17.7 billion. That's 11% growth year over year. I guess I should talk about profits if I could figure out where profits are.
Google profits are so boring because it's always like people billions. Either clicked on ads or they didn't. It's
right.
Not like, you do Apple earnings and it's like we sold this many products and that's useful. But this is just like whether or not people clicked on ads.
I think the reason the market was encouraged, of course, was that it showed that Google, just after a long period of decline in the cost per click and troubles with mobile monetization showed that they were doing okay, that they'd figured it out.
Yeah, they did better at mobile ads, and people are watching a lot more YouTube. I think that was basically
the YouTube was the big story, right? 40 minutes per viewer per day.
And everybody loves video ads, so we can go back to the TV format.
Can't get enough of them video ads.
Watch one now.
Also, the other interesting stat was that Google was happy to crow is that YouTube is bigger in the 18 to 49 age group than any other cable channel. So, bigger than ESPN, bigger than CNN. It is as big as a big cable channel. Okay. Let's see. Revenues, Google member websites. Total advertising revenues up 11% year over year, 3% quarter to quarter. So that's good. That's what you want to see, growth.
I did see a story last week related to this that Google is being more cautious in how many people it's actually bringing on as new hires. And I'm looking here, and it does show the headcount obviously went up, but they're trying to do some, it looks like, expense management now, more so than they ever did before. I think it was in the New York Times, that article. So,
yeah. Well, that would be prudent, even when the market's going well, when things are going well, to not overhire. The current headcount is 57,148. That's up almost 10,000 from this time last year. So they've been growing at a torrid rate. It's other little tidbits. If the euro weren't so damn weak, they would have made $1.1 billion more. The foreign exchange rate, had foreign exchange rates remained constant from the second quarter of 2015 through the second quarter of 2015, our revenues in the second quarter would have been $1.1 billion higher.
Thanks, Greece.
Thank you, Greece. It's amazing when you get to this size. It's amazing. An 8% growth means $60 billion in market value. I mean, it's, you know, Greece collapses, and it's billions of dollars it's costing us in exchange rate.
The $60 billion thing. It's like Uber is like $40 or $50
right.
billion dollars.
It gained more than an Uber, like two Ubers.
Uber to the company. Yeah,
that's a good way to put it. I don't. Are they back down? Because you know, Apple was going up until Apple announced that it only made lots of money last quarter, and then their stock tanked. The stock market is so strange. I presume your employers, certainly my employer, don't allow you to buy tech stocks. So,
nope.
We can just watch on the sidelines. Nope. Thank God. Here's a list from Business Insider of companies complaining to the EU about how well Google is doing.
The sour grape squad.
The sour grapes. We're so angry. AppNexus and OpenX have asked, I don't ever even heard of them, have asked European regulators to investigate Google's dominance, according to the Financial Times. They went to the European Commission and said, we're angry. We're mad. Apparently, I should go to the. Unfortunately, the FT is behind a paywall, so I have to read other people's. Yeah, see.
So these are ad networks over.
Yeah,
in the EU?
European ad networks.
Okay.
Thank you, Rupert. Can't read the article. Let's take a break. Come back with more. Google Plus is losing the photos. We can explain what that all means. They've now got a plug-in for Microsoft Office that means you can even be less dependent on Microsoft than ever before. And Microsoft says, yeah. And we'll talk about Eddystone. Actually, I'm really interested in what you guys think about Google's beacons. Yeah. We try to understand a little bit better on Sunday on Twit, but I want to hear the experts weigh in on this. Our show today brought to you by a company that will help you be expert, lynda.com. 3,700 on-demand video courses in every area. Things like business skills, like negotiation and resume building. How to use productivity skills. How to use Word, Office, Excel. Photography, Photoshop, your hobby. Courses on SEO. SEO tools fundamentals. The universal principles of design. See, I'd love to take that. Google Drive, essential training. There's also essential training for Eclipse, if you use that IDE. There's a lot of great stuff at lynda.com. All of lynda.com's courses are taught by smart people, people who work in the field, but they're also excellent teachers. the videos have written transcripts, so you can search the transcript for a particular part of the video. And that's kind of nice, too. They're kind of broken up in a way that you can do a little bit at a time or a lot at a time. You can go beginning to end like a traditional course. But it's better than a traditional course because you can also just read or go through one chapter or one segment, polish up one skill in Photoshop. Lots of programming stuff. This is a course on C. Everybody's just for fun should learn C. C Essential Training. I love it. You can download those tutorials, too, and watch them on the go on your iOS or Android device. They've got apps for every platform. Create playlists of courses you want to watch. Take notes. They're stored on the site, so you've got them wherever you go. LYNDA.com. You know, the best thing to do, try it free for 10 days. 10 days, the run of the place. Every single one of those videos accessed easily, simply. 3,707 courses. More than 100,000 tutorials. The price is right when you buy, but this is free for 10 days. Lynda, LYNDA.com/twig, TWIG, Lynda.com. We love them. You will, too. Let's talk beacons. Apple made a lot of hay. It's more than a year ago when they announced that all along they'd been building in this beacon technology to iOS. And, in fact, every iOS device was both a sender and a receiver of beacons. And yet nothing really seemed to have happened. There was a lot of talk about how people might put iBeacons in stores. I guess some ballparks have iBeacons. You wrote an article, Ron, on Ars Technica about Google's response to this, which was just announced. It's an open source version of iBeacon called Eddystone.
Yeah, so Eddystone, I guess you would say, is going to do better than iBeacon because it's open source and a lot more flexible. So when Apple did iBeacon, they wanted to make it like a differentiator for iOS.
Right.
But when you're trying to sell this to companies that don't care and just want to reach everybody, like if you're a store in the mall and you want to send coupons to people, you don't care about just iOS. You want to, you know, reach all of your customers.
Yeah, and if half of your customers are using Android phones, that's not going to do you any good.
Exactly, right. And some people tried to come up with, like, hacks to make this work on Android, but it's not officially supported, and Apple actually went to some of these people and said, hey, you're an iBeacon, partner, so don't
mess with us.
Don't put it on Android, or we will cut off your partnership status.
Wow.
So
Google had to do this if they wanted to play in this game.
Yeah, I mean, there's one other open source beacon standard, I think, but, you know, this one's going to have Google's backing, so it's going to be built into Android, and they'll have a version for iOS. So the cross-platform thing is going to be a big deal for all the companies that you actually need to adopt this for it to be useful.
Besides being open, how is Eddystone different?
iBeacon needs an app to work. So basically, you know, Apple's motto has always been there's an app for that. So in order to use iBeacon, you need an app. And if you're like a big Starbucks customer and you go there all the time, that's fine. You'll have the Starbucks app. But if you walk up to like a Coke machine and just want to buy a Coke or something, you don't want to have to install an app just to do this one thing. Mm-hmm. So Eddystone will do the app stuff, and then it adds a couple different other modes to make this more useful for everybody. So there's one that will work with a website. So basically, you know, the beacon pops out and says, hey, here's a web link for like this soda machine or parking meter or whatever. And you go there and you can, you know, pay for stuff or see a coupon or whatever. And there's a lot less friction there because you don't need to install an app. There's another mode that's really interesting. That's for like personal use, where you'll be able to have a beacon that only you can read, and you'll be able to like attach it to your keys or your luggage, and it'll be able to find.
Oh, that's interesting. That
so it's kind of like the Motorola KeyLink, but like a standardization of that. And then the fourth mode is for people that have to manage all of these beacons. There'll be a way for them to just kind of walk around and get battery information and where these things are, and just kind of an easy way to throw together like a status board of what all your beacons are doing right now. Because that was Google said they went out and talked to a bunch of Beacon ecosystem people, and that was one of the features that they really asked for. Just an easy way, when you have 50 million of these things, like an easy way to manage them and see what they're doing. So with the four different modes, it should be a little more useful and widely adopted than iBeacon. But the big questions are what happens for spam. Like if you just set one of these things up and it directs you to like a horrible website full of viruses. For iBeacon, because this was all managed by applications, if a beacon's doing something bad, you can easily blame it on that app, uninstall the app, it stops detecting the beacon. But Google's going to build like an operating system level beacon detector that goes out and finds everything and gives you like a list. And that doesn't have any traffic control on it that we've heard about. So that's risky. We need to do something. We don't have the full picture yet. I mean, it's really not totally out yet to play with. But yeah, it'll be weird for somebody, you know, your phone is just going to pick up all this stuff. It's only when you say show me
you have to enable it. Yeah.
Yeah, you like kind of it's kind of like searching for Bluetooth devices.
What are the benefits to an end user? Why would I enable it?
Ooh. I've wanted this for a long time and I can tell you why.
Why?
Well, because I want presence in my house. I want to walk into a room and have the lights go on without using some other sensor.
This is the other use of it, which is your device is a beacon. Mm-hmm. It's not merely a recipient, it's a sender.
Right, exactly.
Well, you can do that for like a weird testing mode, but for the most part, no, it's just one way.
See, Apple's does do that. That's something that iBeacon does do. And in fact, that was the kind of the revelation 2 years ago when Apple announced iBeacon is, yeah, we've been building this in, and oh, by the way, your phone and your iPad are beacons. So it could do what you want to do, Kevin, which is you walk into a room and a picture comes up or your music changes or whatever. But that's Apple.
It's one way, but it serves to kick you out to a two-way communication system. So you'll get booted into an app or a web page or something, and then you'll be able to do the two-way talking. Because it's a low-power Bluetooth device, they don't want the actual device to do too much communication.
So Kevin can have a little beacon in his room, some sort of device that's in a room. He walks into the room. The beacon says hello to his phone. A conversation begins, and then the phone can say, "I like the Beatles."
The beacons have IDs, basically, like big long numbers that are like unique to them. So all the beacons really ever say is, "Hi, I'm Beacon 12345," and then your phone on Eddystone at least goes up to the cloud, and Google has a big database up there that says, "Beacon 12345 is this. It's in this location." It wants you to go to this web page or open this app or do something. So you see the beacon, you go up to the cloud and you get all this like metadata around the beacon that you have to set up.
So I understand how it would work at a zoo or a museum. You walk in front of a painting and then your phone, if you're listening in the earbuds, will start playing a commentary. That makes sense. I could see in a store you get near the Levi's display, it can pop up a coupon.
Right. I mean, part of it is like it kind of works like a QR code would.
Right.
Where, mm-hmm. yeah, where it's just here's a way to jump to the internet and get this. But, you know, you don't need a QR code scanner and you don't need to physically, you know where the QR code is. It's like a QR code that comes to you. Just GPS isn't that accurate. So these give you like a super accurate way to say, I am here. I am at this bus stop. I'm not in the restaurant behind the bus stop or the bus stop on the other side of the street. I'm right here. And what can you do for me now?
It's been out for 2 years. It doesn't, maybe I'm just going to the wrong zoos. It doesn't seem like I see a lot of iBeacon stuff.
Some of the ballparks, I think, put it in.
Yeah.
Something tells me you could wander into an Apple store and they would have.
I'm sure they're using it there.
I don't actually know this, but I'm sure.
But that's one of the problems is unless there's a big sign that says, please install this app and turn it on, you wouldn't know.
That's right, yeah. There's a physical app. There's a physical Apple store app now, right? And I guess you would need that to get the beacon. Right. Like you need to know what app you need to get the beacon on iBeacon.
Right.
Which is weird, but okay.
The other problem I think Apple came up against is that they announced this 2 years ago, and then like a month later, Edward Snowden's revelations started trickling out, and people said, yeah, maybe this isn't such a good idea. We don't want to be announced everywhere we go.
Yeah, security's or privacy is weird because the beacons could potentially track your Bluetooth ID and say,
right,
this Bluetooth ID was here.
You're broadcasting your unique identifier constantly.
Yeah,
aren't
I
you?
Think iBeacon has stuff. I think iBeacon has stuff to stop that. I haven't heard about it for Eddystone. That doesn't mean it doesn't. Just I haven't heard about it. I don't know.
Wasn't it Qualcomm that tried this right after Apple did with the Gimbal platform?
Yeah, but wasn't Gimbal compatible with Apple's?
I thought it was. Yeah. I thought it was cross-platform. I could be wrong on that.
Yeah.
But that hasn't gone anywhere either that I know of.
I feel like the real problem that everybody who wants to do this is facing is this notion of privacy. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to announce my presence. And the fear that a lot of people have that this will be solely used to sell them stuff.
I mean, so is the internet.
Welcome to the internet.
Every page you go to, every page you go to is an advertisement. But no, some of it, just information, you know, mass transit information, bus stop, subways, all that would be useful, you know, to be able to buy stuff easier. Buy a Coke in a stadium without having to go anywhere and have it delivered to your seat or stuff like that. It's neat. I mean, it's neat to be able to just kind of get a web page that knows where you are and what you're in front of, and people can do stuff with that. It's, you know, I'm sure it could be used for good or evil.
You mentioned that one of the resistances companies had to dealing with Apple's iBeacon is this platform exclusiveness. Are more people interested now in Eddystone because it's open?
Google launched with a bunch of hardware partners. So, I mean, it's mostly a question of if businesses will be interested in it. So I don't know. You'd have to sell it to them. But I talked to some of the hardware guys, and they're like, yeah, we could build beacons that have iBeacon and Eddystone in it, and you can just get this one little box that'll do both. They won't do both at the same time. You'd have to, like, switch modes.
Oh, well, that's no good.
But, I mean, I assume businesses would like it now that it's cross-platform, but I don't know.
So can I put Eddystone on an iPhone?
As a developer, you can make an iPhone Eddystone aware on... You know, Google has access to the Android operating system, so it will be built into the operating system. They don't have access to iOS, so it will just be at the app level. I guess it would work in that way. It would work a little more like how iBeacon does, where you have this one app that is Eddystone aware.
Right.
They wanted to build it into Chrome, I think, the physical web stuff at least, which is kind of like the web page portion of this. So, yeah, if Google goes and, like, Trojan horses it into some popular app they have, that could work.
Well, Google Now would be the one, right?
Yeah.
I mean, certainly on Android, it makes sense. And you point this out in the article that beacons don't have to buzz or alert you. They could just give you a Google Now card.
Yeah, yeah. And Google says they have a couple implementations right now of beacon stuff. So Google Maps will use it to suck down real-time transit information of the transit thing you're standing in front of, and you can use it for better location. And what else? Yeah, Google Now would use it for better location for cards. So, you know, it would know you're in the restaurant and not at the bus stop and all that.
And
super accurate location.
I presume the Google app on iOS would take advantage of it as well. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Google search, sure.
Yeah. And then Now cards show up there. So... In fact, Google Now has cards that show you where you parked, but it's using GPS. I think beacons might be useful for that. I'm just trying to think of uses. And the thing is, I just haven't seen a lot of people adopting it. Maybe this will make a difference.
I guess I'm ahead of the curve on the smart home thing.
So wait a minute. You have beacons in your house?
I would love beacons in my house.
But you haven't done it yet.
I haven't done it yet. I was looking at Estimote, I think, makes them. I was looking at some beacons, but haven't done it yet.
So I see your echo over your left shoulder. You'd have Alexa say, "Hi, Kevin. Would you like your news briefing now?"
Alexa, office on.
I have...
Oh!
Really?
Is that Hue you're using for that?
Actually, I'm using the lower-costing Wink Hub.
Ah, yeah, Wink's supposed to work well.
Alexa, office off.
But it just turns the light on and off. Doesn't do anything else.
Yeah.
The bed doesn't start rotating.
Dance yet.
No.
No.
You don't get Barry White music.
I have a Nest and SmartThings and a couple door locks and stuff. And I don't see why they all can't just use Wi-Fi for my location. Like when I connect to my home Wi-Fi, unlock the doors, turn the air conditioning on. Like that should tell it that I'm here.
QuickSet uses Bluetooth LA, right? That's how the QuickSets work, I think.
QuickSets?
The QuickSet locks.
Or no? Oh, I don't know.
They might use ZigBee.
No, mine.
They use ZigBee?
Mine are, Z-Wave.
Z-Wave.
I think. Yeah, the smart home stuff is, or the smart things. Smart things will do both, but yeah, I think all my stuff is Z-Wave, which is just to communicate to the thing. But, you know, you talk to the hub and then it unlocks everything. But
so that's the other use for beaconing is Internet of Things kind of stuff like this, like home automation and so forth.
I would hope so. I mean, I think it's more that these Internet of Things companies aren't very good. Like even Nest, you would think that would use Wi-Fi. My, you know, because I sit in front of this computer and the thermostat's over there.
Yeah.
I'll have my thing kick in auto away when I'm here, when my phone's here, and it just doesn't use GPS. It doesn't use Wi-Fi. Why doesn't it do that? Just because they have not decided to implement it, and there's not much competition, and it's just not refined, I guess.
They either need sensors to be reading where you are in your house, or we need a beacon implementation to be put together with us.
So Google had already announced Weave, which is their Internet of Things protocol. Does this integrate with Weave?
Nope. No. Oh, man. There's so many things going on now. There's no way I'm rattling this off the top of my head.
I'm looking at your article and I still don't understand.
Yeah, there's,
you got Weave, you got Thread.
Okay, right. So
Thread is like ZigBee, Z-Wave. It's a protocol.
Right, Thread is an actual, like, bits through the air wireless communication protocol. Eddystone is over Bluetooth. It's a form of communication. Would you call it a protocol? I guess it's a format that goes over Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. So Weave is Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. Eddystone is Bluetooth. Thread is a totally different thing all of its own. The physical web is kind of like the URL portion of Eddystone. They're just kind of like overlapping. And then there's Brillo, which is an Android-based Internet of Things operating system that will save like door lock manufacturers.
And they wonder why nobody is doing this.
Yeah, no, it's impossible. Well,
every company, though, I mean, Microsoft, Apple, Google, they all want to do this stuff. They've all made big initiatives. There's HomeKit on Apple. There's all these things from Google. Why do they want to be in this? Is it that consumers are demanding it? Why isn't it taking off? It just seems like we've still got that kind of Tower of Babel with all these different interacting protocols that don't interoperate, and it just seems like a mess.
I think the best way to think of Google is not as a single company with a direction, but rather a bunch of different companies that are all under the Google banner. So, like, if you look at that list, Brillo is from the Android team. Right. That's the Android guy's idea of what, you know, the Internet of Things should be like. Weave and Thread are from Nest. That's their idea of what the Internet of Things should be like. These guys don't really talk to each other all that often. Google's happy to let them compete and have the best team win. They're never worried about unification, really.
Right.
And see, this goes back to the whole Nest purchase. I mean, $3.2 billion just to get a smart thermostat and smart smoke detectors. I mean, I would have thought that group would have brought the platform to get these things to communicate, and they're not even working on the Brillo and the Weave stuff, as far as I know.
They bought Nest bought Revolve, which was a smart home hub company.
It had every radio that you could think of.
Right. It did. And that's really the future of smart homes. I think it's, you know, you make a lock that can lock and unlock over the internet. That's fine. You're done. You don't need to upgrade that lock. But the smart home hub is something that you would want to upgrade, that would get new software, new interfaces. And things like that, because right now the problem with all this is the interface. Nobody really knows whether it should be like a dashboard full of toggles or something that happens automatically as you kind of come and go. It's just, that's the part that needs to get figured out.
Here's a video Adrian gave us in the chat room. I think this is a Dutch commercial. of why you you don't really want a smart home. Some bad guys coming up to the gate, which opens. They were about to climb over it. They're a little puzzled. They go up to the front door and it unlocks. And they walk in. They even, as they walk by various items in the house, like a painting that lights up, they go, oh, I guess I'll take this Rauschenberg there. Just put that in a bag. And, there's the automatic vacuum cleaner. The fireplaces come on and the TV.
Gotcha.
It turns out that this guy who owns this house is on stage doing a demo of how his his home automation system can...
And the only one with access is me.
I don't know what even Appeldorn means, but...
That's great.
Isn't that great?
That's
little,
great.
A little Dutch humor to tell you why home automation isn't all it's cracked up to be.
You know, smart things can control my door locks, and that uses Google's Fuse location provider, which combines like Wi-Fi and GPS and all that to know where you are and unlock the doors when you show up. But Google's location thing does not know about Wi-Fi hotspots. So I brought the Wi-Fi hotspot with me to New York City. I'm in New Jersey and connected to the Wi-Fi hotspot, and it came on and said, oh, you've arrived at home because you connected to your
confused.
Wi-Fi. And my door's unlocked when I was like
200
miles away. And I'm just like,
so
okay,
that ad is not far off.
No, it's not.
What a mess. And, you know, we're all early adopters, so we play with all this stuff. And SmartThings is an advertiser. I guess I should give that disclaimer. They seem like, though, they have figured out the idea that, well, you've got to have everything talk to everything else.
Yeah. The hubs are definitely necessary.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's cool what it does. It's just, you know, there's bugs to work out and stuff to think about, I guess.
Why do Apple, Microsoft, and Google all want to get in this business? Do they see this as being a very big business at some point?
What kind of data are they really getting? I mean, they can already get location data.
Yeah, people assumed when they bought Nest that Google was going to kind of watch, watching you through your thermostat. I don't think they care about that.
Right. And it's like, you have a smartphone. There is pretty much no worse privacy violating thing if somebody wanted to be evil.
You got Android?
GPS,
we don't need Nest.
Camera. Yeah, really. but no, I mean, it's software and they just want to jump on it and they make software. That's it. I guess it's a way to make money. I don't know. I mean,
well, I think maybe you hit the nail on the head when you said you can't think of Google as a monolithic company. It's not one company. It's just a bunch of people doing something they're interested in.
Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, when you work at Google and have tons of money to burn on this stuff, I'm sure you're like, boy, I sure wish my house would just unlock when I show up and the lights turn on and it plays me a song. And Google's like, we'll pay you to work on that.
Right.
Go for it. Mm-hmm.
I think some of this is that engine people like us geeks and engineers are scratching their own itch, even though no normal human has any interest in this.
Oh, God. Yeah. This would be impossible to set up for a normal person.
Yeah.
It'd be so hard.
More work than it's worth. It's not so hard to stick a key in a door lock and open your door.
Yeah, I did a do-it-yourself home automation type system back in 2010 using Insteon, which at the time I thought was the best solution. And I got it working. I mean, I could get my garage door to remotely open and close. I had webcams that I could access. My lights would go on and off, timed to the daylight, sunrise, sunset, and so on. But, you know, the average person would have never gone through what I went through to make it all work, nor spent the money at that time.
It's like building a model railroad. It's a specialty act.
Yeah. Right. And the centralization that they want to push is kind of weird. Like I was looking into a light switch solution, like Kevin just, you know, said some command to his Amazon box and his lights turned off. And I'm like, for real, like my hallway and bathrooms, the best smart light thing is just a motion detector hooked up to the light switch. That you just screw into the wall and it's done.
Yes.
And you walk into the hallway.
We've
and the
had those for
off.
Years.
Right. And it's like, you don't need an internet connection or some hub or whatever. And that's like one of the best things that I've installed because it just works and it's there and it's fine and it's simple. And a normal person could do that.
Just get the clapper.
My old house had I had a Nest installed. I had Hue lights. I did a lot of that stuff. And the telling thing is when I moved, I didn't install it again at all. The Hue light bulbs are in a box. The Nest is just in a box. It's just, that was nice. It was fun. You know what I did install? We're going to do an ad. Are you ready for a smart device? This is kind of like the thing that you mentioned in the bathroom where you come in, the lights come on. This is really what you need. This is the Ring doorbell, and I love it because it's got a camera. It's very easy to install. In fact, this is how everything should be. It comes with everything you need to install it, including drill bits, screws. There's even a level in here and all of this. It's very simple to do. I installed it myself, and I am the farthest thing from a handyman. If you've got a wired doorbell, you just take the wired leads, and it's ready to go. But this also has a lithium-ion battery that you could charge via USB that lasts a year. So you unclip it, charge it, clip it back on, and it lasts a year. It's a normal doorbell. It'll ring your doorbell and everything. But when you do that, the camera comes on. And let me show you, actually. I have it on my phone. And you can, I can, now it doesn't unlock the door, and I kind of like that. We're not talking about unlocking the door. We're just merely talking about seeing who's at the door and talking to them. You can hear them. They can hear you. Here's my Ring doorbell app. You can have multiple doorbells attached to a single door. So here's somebody rang our doorbell last night at 6:53. This is the other thing. Now, you don't have to do this. They get a free month or something, but there's somebody at my doorbell. Oh, yeah, he brought the Chinese food. So I could talk to him. He could talk to me. But for a security point of view, this is also awesome because it has a motion detector. So I can see when motion happened, not only missed doorbell calls, but when motion happened, and go back and look at those videos. It turns out when bad guys rob your house, they almost always ring the doorbell first to see if you're there, right? So it's really kind of amazing what you get. This is Ring. About 95% of all home break-ins happen during the day, and it almost always starts with ringing the doorbell. With the Ring doorbell, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world. So when somebody rings my doorbell, this has been very useful. The UPS guy comes, and I can say, yeah, just leave it there. I'm in the shower, even though I'm at work. Ring's motion detector will alert you. By the way, you can set it for sensitivity. So initially I had it real sensitive. It was picking up all the stuff. I turned it down till it was just right, so it was just people on my porch. It's kind of like caller ID on your home. It is easy to install. Now, I'm a nitwit and took me about half an hour. But I think anybody who knows what they're doing is going to be able to install it very quickly. Time magazine named the Ring Video Doorbell one of the top 10 gadgets last year. And I'm going to get you $25 off. $174 when you go to ring.com/twig. Do not be intimidated. This is easy to install. It uses your Wi-Fi. Once the Wi-Fi is set up, there's nothing more to do. It's painless. And having done a bunch of this stuff, as I said, this is the one that I'm keeping with me. In fact, we're going to put one out on the back door, on the front door of the office. And you can have multiple rings in a single app on your phone. Ring.com/twig. And I've talked to a number of people who have installed it since we started doing the ads. And they, to a person, say, yeah, it was easy. Yeah, I love it. Ring.com/twig. Now, that's home automation. It's not really automation. But it's just nice to be able to look out and see who's at your door.
Yeah, that is definitely a solution I've wanted. Who is ringing my doorbell and why?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had a doorbell we'd never hear. So, I mean, it would ring and I would never know. But now that not only is the doorbell ring, my phones ring. And I have Ring on all of my devices. So you don't miss them. Somebody comes to my doorbell, the house lights up.
That's cool.
I know. I love it. Google did hire the execs from HomeJoy. HomeJoy shuttered its doors. This is another new business for Google. What is HomeJoy, besides the name? Professional house cleaning services.
Yeah.
They closed their doors July 31st, and then it was announced that Google had hired most of the team. So the idea is you use a smartphone app. Oh, Robert Scoble likes it. It must be good. Use a smartphone app to schedule cleaners. It's an interesting idea. Google has hired the team. I guess, I don't know, they're not taking over the business.
Yeah, what would the sales pitch be? Uber for people that will come and clean your house?
Or Uber for maids, stuff? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that this is an indication that Google's getting into that market. like
they might just be good programmers.
Yeah, they do acqui-hire sometimes, right, where they buy the company and the patent and the people behind it and all that. But this is a company that closed down and went out of business. And yeah, they could have just as easily said, hey, some engineers, let's hire some engineers, right, and not care at all about the idea. Because, I mean, it doesn't make much sense for them to do this. It's not.
According to Recode, HomeJoy went out of business kind of independently. They had classified employees as contract workers. And
And with all these legal problems, why would you mess with it?
Right. Mm-hmm. But Google did hire 20 people from the product and engineering team. So you got to wonder if there's something similar that Google wants to do. There are other companies who do this. Handy and Thumbtack. Who was it was having a horrible? Oh, was it Chris Messina? I think it was Chris Messina had hired Handy. And then they didn't show up or something, and he couldn't cancel them very easily. So then he used one of those services you use via text message to cancel Handy.
Like TaskRabbit or something?
Yeah, it was somebody like TaskRabbit. I was watching this all play out on Twitter, and I thought, Chris, you live in the future. It's like, what? Anyway, Amazon is also launching an online portal for home services. So this is a business. Speaking of Amazon, have you used Jet? It's here.
Just launched. Yeah,
it just launched. I don't know how this is a business, to be honest with you. They want to go up against Amazon, created by the guy, Tony Lore? Is that his name? Who created diapers.com. You remember the sad saga of diapers.com. Huh? Not socks, saga of diapers.com. You wouldn't think I'd have a heckler here, but I guess anyway. That was the diapers by mail, you know, Pampers by mail store, and Bezos targeted it, undercut it, put it out of business, then bought it very famously. And Tony Lore, who was the founder, I guess is maybe trying to get back at Bezos with a new service called Jet. There's been a lot of attention to this. They've raised a lot of money. Obviously, the market's very interested in an Amazon competitor. They'd like to get in early on this one. But it's a club. You have to pay $50 ahead of time.
So you don't need an invite now? Because you used to
need... No, they just went out of invite yesterday.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
The problem is, at least during the beta, they don't have any distribution, or they have few distribution centers, and they don't have many distributor deals.
It's going to take forever to ship.
Yeah, it's a big money loser because they have to buy the product and then ship it to you. So, I don't know. Seems like Amazon kind of owns this market, don't they?
Yeah, Prime's fast shipping just makes me go, I could go to the store or I could just press this button and it will just show up.
Yes.
And, you know, when you're a lazy tech journalist who works from home, you're just kind of, I'll just stay here, be a hermit, click.
I find even stupid stuff now, I don't go out and buy. I just have it shipped to me.
Yeah.
Plus, even if you don't have Prime.
Staplers.
Yeah, little stuff.
Little stupid stuff.
Even if you don't have Prime, you can usually get the best price on Amazon. I'm looking here at the Wall Street Journal's article on Jet, and they said...
It's not even the best price.
Yeah, I mean, it costs Jet twice as much as it charged the customer for the 12 items in the particular order. I mean, wow. Loss leader is one thing, but... You know, how long can you do that? Not very long.
Right. That's why they keep having to go to the market and getting more money, right?
Good luck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to see some competition for Amazon, but there are some businesses where it's hard to beat an incumbent. Google's one, right? Search and search ads. And Amazon's another. It seems like Amazon really, unless you picked a niche and you saw what happened with diapers.com. He thought, oh, well, I can beat Amazon because I can beat him on one thing, diapers. And Amazon said, not so fast. Club price savings on pretty much anything you buy.
More expensive and slower than Amazon. Sounds great. Yeah. Where do I sign up?
You got it. Somebody did some research and said some of the prices were lower than Amazon, some were not. But the real deal is if you've got Prime, and I presume anybody who would be looking at this service, Jet, would be a Prime member, you're just going to use Prime.
Yeah.
Pre-shipping over $35, they say free returns.
If you don't have Prime and you're not an Amazon person, that's fine. But I would think there's other there's you know club pricing available through Sam's Club or Costco and such, and they usually beat other people's prices as well.
Amazon was smart; they didn't call it a club. You know, it was just free two day shipping, and it's twice as much, $100 now. But they have so many other features of it, and if you use Amazon, it's in hindsight such a brilliant thing, Prime, because you get people to pay you to be locked in customers. I give them $100 to get locked in. Yeah, but it's better than that because I get something.
It's a good membership card. Yeah.
It's a good membership card. All right. What else? Oh, I haven't got it yet. Have you got Timeline in your in Google Maps yet?
Yeah. Right on the Android app, you can just download it from.
Download a new. Okay, Ron, you tell me now. You're the expert on Android. I've been waiting for it to be updated in the store.
It should come automatically through the store
eventually.
But no, Android Police runs a lovely site called APK Mirror where you can just go and it's like crowdsourced uploads of APKs. You can just go there and download it.
It's being staged then.
Yeah, it's Google Maps 9.12, which is what you want.
So I don't have it yet on my Nexus 6, but Jason Cleanthes, our producer, does. Let me go back. Let me go back and show it. So when you hit the hamburger, you now have, in addition to your places and traffic, and you know you pick which map you want, your timeline. Whoops, and it shows you. Oh, this is cool. All the places you've been. You haven't been many places, Jason. So that's today.
Swipe left and right on the card at the bottom.
I don't know what's happening now.
Just tap on the screen. Okay, tap on the white part at the bottom.
I could pick different days. Oh, this is what was in your dashboard.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. The desktop site updated it updated today, and it looks beautiful. It's really cool.
Well, let me look at that. Is that maps.google.com?
There's a URL for it. We'll just search Google location history, and it should show up. There was some fancy URL that got.
I've always loved that because it you could go. Let me just search it. Google location history. Turn location history offer on. Maps.
It'll be the first link.
It's maps.google.com/location history is what it is.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And then you can play it back too, which is fun. So I just got back from Europe, it should show me my whole trip, right?
Yeah. So there was an old version online, and there's a new version that kind of looks like Material Designer.
Yeah, here it is. Trip to Amsterdam. So there's actually a button I can click that says Trip to Amsterdam, Germany, Vienna, and one other country.
And it pulls in your photos. How cool is that?
Oh no, really?
Very nice.
Yeah, there you go. There's.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. So let me see. How do I? I flew to the airport, and then I got in the boat. Now, okay, but it is confused. So this happens to me a lot. So the boat has Wi-Fi, and the boat's Wi-Fi thinks it's in Amsterdam. So you see all these trips back and forth I'm making to Amsterdam? I'm going back and forth to Amsterdam in a matter of seconds all the time because every time I switch to the boat's Wi-Fi, it suddenly thinks, oh, let's go back to Amsterdam.
that's the exact same thing that happened to my smart home thing where, you connect to your Wi-Fi and it's like, oh, you're at home. Because Google builds database of Wi-Fi hotspots.
That's what it is. Yeah.
And it tries to find out where their location is, but they don't know about mobile hotspots. It's just all hotspots are stationary. And last time we had GPS, we pinged this one and it was here.
You got to fix this, Google. This is crazy.
Yeah. But you'll get and there's assisted GPS and stuff where you'll get like vague location from your cell phone signal where it'll just jump all over the map.
Oh, there.
You broke the speed of light a couple times,
I
think.
I did because at 5:30 I was in Frankfurt and at 8 o'clock I was 1,000 miles away. That's crazy. Look at this.
So if you click on the little thing, you can edit it. I don't know why any normal person
now
care about editing their location history in Google Maps, but you can.
That actually is good. So, and then there's this button that says, I was here. I presume that's the one response, which is, I was here.
Yeah, that's a thing where they're like, we're not sure if you were actually at this building.
I wasn't here, so can I delete it?
With the beacons.
Remove stop from day. Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Like we talked about with the beacons, it's never quite sure.
It's not super smart.
What business you're in,
right?
Because GPS just isn't that accurate.
So also did not go back to Frankfurt. Okay.
So yeah, you could sit here and correct it, but I don't know why.
I was here at the museum. This is fun though, that it puts the pictures in here is really cool.
So is this like the old Latitude product that they had?
Yeah, there was another great product that Google killed.
Well, yeah. Latitude was like Find Your Friends, where you would it would tell
location
you where everybody
sharing.
Was.
Right.
Which they're moving to Google Play services now. I think it's currently in Google Plus, hidden that nobody knows about, and I think they're going to cut that from Google Plus next.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, more culling of Google Plus features.
So I need to go through this and delete the spurious Wi-Fi locations, and then I would actually have a useful little map of my travels.
Yeah.
All right, I'll
do that. But my favorite thing that they added is you can now name places on the map in the new Google Maps. So if you have, you know, a favorite lake or spot, or my example was my parents' house, you could label
You could say it's my parents' house. Oh, nice. Now,
and it will show up on the map and, you know, you'll see the text there, because before all you could do was star stuff, and you would have a bunch of stars that were like latitude, longitude numbers, which was completely useless because you had no idea what any individual star was for. But now you can actually tag spots on the map and it will save them. And hopefully this will end up on all the other Google Maps clients, because right now, like, it's on the Android version and it might show up in your location history, but I don't think it shows up on the desktop version of Google Maps yet, or iOS. So,
you know, and a bad thing, if you remove a location because it's a Wi-Fi location and there's pictures attached to it, I don't think it removes the pictures from photos, but it takes them out of your timeline.
Right. It has those pictures because you uploaded them to Google Photos.
It thought that I took those pictures in Amsterdam, but I didn't. But when I took out that stop, it went away. Anyway, play with it. It's another cool thing. I like that timeline. Here, you can have your phone back.
I think I got years of data on here.
That's what's fun. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And if you do it in the dashboard, it tells you things like you spent 47% of your time at home. Things
yeah,
like that.
It's one of the really, like, if you're freaked out by the amount of data Google
Big
knows
data.
About you,
yeah.
Location history is one of the big ones. The other one is you can have a history of your voice searches, which is like your phone randomly turning on because it thought you said okay Google, and recording everything you say for like the next 5 seconds. It's fun to go through and see what it screwed up.
And a lot of it's not actual, it's just things it heard.
Right, it'll just be murmurs, or it's shifting around in my pocket. Or
yeah, there's a lot of butt dialing going on.
Yeah.
Big data, baby. Here's my voice and audio activity that it thinks I sent to Google.
My voice is my passport.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. My voice is
my
passport.
Okay, Google. Five Nights at Freddy's.
See? There's a search. Yeah, this is... See, it's funny. It just shows you... This is actually... a litmus test to see if you're a person of the future or a person of the past. A normal person of the past would get horrified by this.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But I think this is cool.
So if you're brave, the ones you want to play are the ones that say transcript not available.
Yeah, because you don't know.
Which is where it screwed up and it wasn't a Google search.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't turn those on. Some of this stuff is definitely weird. But that, to me, I think that's cool that Google saved all that. Thank you, Google. Even though you didn't tell me ahead of time.
You opted in. There were some terms of service that you blew by and just hit next door. And that counts.
I definitely know there was nothing that I signed up for that said, save everything I say to my phone for the rest of my life. I don't think that was in there.
Yeah, it was somewhere.
It was there.
Easy to turn off and easy to delete.
It was there.
They got you.
It was there. Does Cortana do that? See, actually, this is what's different about Google. They all, Siri, everybody, they are all being sent to the company and being stored. Only Google lets you hear it, though, again, after the fact.
Right. And the reason I know you agreed to it is because it's part of the setup when you do an Android phone. It asks you every single time, again and again and again, hey, do you want to give us location history and all this other stuff? Mm-hmm. So you do have to set it up every time. But it's
no, yeah, but it's not. It could be more clear. It could be more clear.
It could make a bigger deal out of it. Sure.
We are going to save these, you know, forever. It's, you know, it could be hidden in something like send data back to Google to improve our services, that kind of thing.
I think it's the time frame that probably freaks people out. I mean, I just looked and there were trips to Phoenix and Las Vegas that I took 5 years ago showing up in timeline.
Imagine 50 years from now. This quantified self is happening whether you like it or not all the time. As you said, Kevin, you said, or maybe it was Ron said it, this phone is the perfect spy device.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It knows everything.
You won't bury time capsules in the future. This is your time capsule.
Yeah. It turns out I've been saving every Google picture, you. Every voice dictation, everything. The AP is doing the same. Apparently, the Associated Press has been saving everything, and they have just uploaded 500,000 newsreel clips to YouTube.
With ads?
Well, who cares? I hope. I don't care. Yeah. Make some money. That's amazing. These are British movie tones. Mm. Here's the Prince of Wales at the Rio Carnival. I mean, just crazy stuff. Mm. Prince Charles came to the Rio Carnival expecting to see beautifully dressed. There's the ad. Wow, it's a big one, isn't it? Wow. That's all right. I don't mind. I mean, this stuff is great.
Oh, yeah. From a nostalgic point of view, I think it's fantastic. Well,
from you got history point of view, too.
Yeah, you got the Hindenburg there and whatnot.
Yeah. And so let me see which account this is. AP Archive. YouTube.com/APArchive. Wow. 500,000 videos, and they're going to put more up there. And then the Movie Tone channel has footage from 1895 to 1986. That is pretty cool. We live in an interesting time. I mean, prior to whatever it was, 1930 or 40, stuff just wasn't recorded. You can't see Abe Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, but future generations will see everything. They can see everything. I think that's neat. What are we doing? How are we doing on time here? I'm going to do another ad, but is there anything you guys want to talk about before I go to a break? Any story in there that grabs your attention?
Oh, I don't know. I spent the last week with an Android Auto car.
You did?
Fun. Yeah.
Tell us about that.
The Hyundai Sonata. I guess I have. I turned in my 8,500 word review today.
Oh, good.
And my editors are dealing with that. But there's lots of neat stuff.
You're becoming you're replacing John Siracusa, aren't you?
For real. He's like my idol. I try to live up to that level of
detail,
in-depthness. Yeah, sure.
Obsessive detail.
So it's like, some of it's weird, man. It's a Hyundai Sonata, and they've kind of passed this car out to everybody. And while you can run Android Auto on your phone and beam it to the car interface, just like it's just like CarPlay, I guess. But the Hyundai Sonata itself runs Android, which I guess nobody else figured out. So like the stock infotainment system that you get from Hyundai is built on Android. And does anybody want to guess what version of Android they're using this thing?
It ain't Gingerbread, I hope.
Better not be.
Good call. It is Android 2.3 Gingerbread.
No!
What?
No!
So, like, one of the reasons we need these CarPlay and Android Auto is just these car companies don't, they're not good at making software.
It's not even
they're
that.
So bad at it.
They are on a different time frame. They're on a geologic time scale, not on a Silicon Valley time scale.
Top to bottom, the built-in infotainment system is a 2011 smartphone. It runs Gingerbread. The screen is 480 by 800. Yeah. The processor is a single core 1 gigahertz Freescale processor. So it's basically a Motorola Droid. It's like 8 inches across from 2011.
And yet it's probably light years ahead of what Hyundai used last year.
Yeah, probably. But like it's a 2015 car, but you when you turn on Android Auto though, everything just kind of it's like welcome back to 2015. You know, step back into the present.
I thought that the goal of both Android Auto and CarPlay was to take the smarts from my current phone and make that be the system in the car, as opposed to having the car having its own system.
It's basically an app that runs on top of the existing infotainment system. So
I can't use the apps on my current phone. I have to use... I'm confused.
No, it uses Android Auto on the car is an application. So you press the Android Auto icon and you launch into this new interface. It's a lot like Windows 8, where you have this old legacy interface, and then you have this new interface on top of it that isn't as feature complete. So you kind of end up hopping from one to the other. So Android Auto will do like phone and music and
messaging
maps.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, messaging. And
quick, get out of the house. RoboCop is arriving. What the hell is that?
And fire smoke alarm?
My wife.
Huh? I think your home is too automated now, Kevin.
Are you on fire, Kevin? The home has reached sentience. It's coming for you.
So I'm really curious what you're saying, Ron. So, okay, in my Mustang, it was running Microsoft Car. It probably had a really old slow processor. It probably had no memory. It certainly had slow storage. It ran software. You turn on the car, it boots up, and now I've got maps. I've got different stuff, control the air conditioning. And as we've learned, I can also cause the car to die or break. This sounds like they're just updating that system with an Android OS. Is that not the case?
No, I mean, you have to use in terms of, so there's two different systems. There's a stock infotainment system that you get with the car.
Yeah.
And then there's Android Auto. And the stock infotainment system needs some kind of operating system. And it's just coincidence that they used Android.
Oh.
Android Auto runs on your phone and treats the car dashboard screen as like a computer monitor.
Good. That's
like,
what I,
display
yeah.
Display this image.
Yeah, and that's what you want, because that's going to be more up to date.
Yes, but it doesn't control lots of things you would want it to control because it's just on your phone. So you can't adjust the screen brightness. You can't, mess with the air conditioner. There's all sorts of things that you need the stock infotainment system for that Android Auto can't do. And to me, Google has always, with Android, they've always been in the business of making operating systems. And Android Auto is not an operating system. It's just like an app that runs other apps that live on your car screen. So it's weird that they have this, like, they're already using Android. And I wish Google would just make a version of Android that would just take over the whole car and wouldn't just be a thing that runs on top of an existing crusty old operating system.
So I could listen, though. I could put Pandora on my phone and then using that app on the car system, listen to my Pandora music from my phone.
Right. Okay. Some Pandora specifically. Apps need to be specifically written to work with Android Auto. Right now there are 17 total apps that you can download, including Google's. So there's not a ton. But they did, these developers can all add compatibility. It's pretty easy. You just have to bug them to do so. And then, you can switch from, Pandora to SoundCloud to Google Music to Spotify to whatever you want, assuming, all of those people get their apps updated.
Is Waze in there?
No, just Google Maps.
Just Google Maps.
Yeah, and Google Maps.
Because Waze is the first thing you'd want to be able to do, isn't it?
But Google Maps pulls in Waze.
Some in Waze information.
Some of their data. The really sad thing is the way developers are locked down. So because of all the safety restrictions, developers can only make two kinds of apps, messaging apps and music apps. And they don't even get control of the interface. They can plug into Google's existing interface template, and that's it. So like a big part of the smartphone revolution was all of this innovation from third-party app developers.
Right.
And you're never going to see that on Android Auto because it's all, the safety people say that you can only have this And
well, I understand that. You don't want people Facebooking from the center console and things like
that. Right, but if you wanted to do something like a sports car app that shows you lap times and 0 to 60 times and stuff like that, you'll never have that. You'll never have an app that like finds the cheapest gas station and directs
you. Really?
No, because it's only Google has like an innovation monopoly on the platform. It's apps do this and this and this and this, and third-party developers can't add new features. Wow. You can plug in and, you know, send us your audio stream and we'll stick it in the music player. But that's it.
And that's for safety reasons.
Yeah, yeah. Because some of it's they worked with the National Highway Safety Institute and there's all sorts of laws and stuff like that.
Okay.
But the thing safety.
So
really
Apple's solution will probably be similarly hobbled.
Yeah, I haven't tried CarPlay yet. I want to. But yeah, I mean, there's a constant debate about what is and isn't safe, I guess, behind the wheel of a car. Right. And it's like,
that's okay because I can just pull out my smartphone and I can do whatever I want to do while I'm driving. So
right, if you make it too safe, people will just stop using it.
Right.
So I mean, you have to strike the balance between functionality and safety, and it's weird.
Yeah.
From a security standpoint, I would have hoped that they had gone with a newer version of Android.
No kidding.
And I bring that up only because just was it earlier this week or last week? Hackers took over a Jeep Cherokee. There's a big Wired article and, you know, cut the brakes and cut the transmission when the guy was going 60 miles an hour. And I mean, I know that this is really a walled off, very sandbox type of application.
That's precisely the problem. And we talked about this on Security Now. We've done it several times, is that most cars use CAN bus they have a single CAN bus in the car that connects everything, the entertainment system, along with the car's own computer systems. And so because they're all on the same network, it's very difficult to keep one from affecting the other. So if you can hack the media system, which is what happened in this case, in fact, they hacked it in such a way that you could do it remotely because these cars, these particular cars, and many cars nowadays, were on a cell network. They're on the Sprint network. So you can actually you can hack the car to know exactly where it is, where its IP address is, and then where it is in location, and then you can start messing with it.
I was shocked when I found out it was Android. I was sure it would be like QNX or Linux or some. Yeah,
and some car manufacturers are using QNX. I know Audi is, but that doesn't solve the problem necessarily because you still got this common bus. So.
Right. So I took a system dump of the car once I found out it was Android. So I have a copy of this.
Did you really?
Yeah. And maybe because what
that seems like a bad thing on the face of it.
Well, what people have always wanted to do is run Android Auto on devices that they have. Because right now you need to either gut your car or buy a brand new car. Since the part of it that lives on the car is called the Android Auto receiver library. So somewhere in the system dump is like that file. And I'm hoping someone smart could figure out what to do with it and how to make it run on a cell phone or something, which would be neat.
If you really like gingerbread.
No. It's just like Android Auto lives on your phone, but there's special code in the car that kicks it over into Android Auto mode.
Well, and that raises another issue. How long before somebody's hacked it to remove limitations?
Yeah, right. And, and I don't know, maybe that'll be nice. Like the text messaging interface is horrible on this. They don't display any text at all. So you just get a text message and you press on the thing that says new text message and it reads it to you. And when you don't have context for a text message, when you press on it and it's like, okay, and like that was the entire message you got.
Not very helpful.
Right. It's like, what was I talking to this person about? And my favorite thing is if you get a URL, there is no special handling.
http://www.
Period. So it makes you like hesitant to press the message button. Like, oh God, is it just going to read letters for the next like 2 hours?
Yeah. Wow.
But I mean, car infotainment systems are a very, very low bar. So once you get any of the smartphone era stuff on your dashboard, you're just like, oh my God, it's so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little buggy, but as a first gen product, it's really great.
It just shows you how 3 or 4 years ago, Silicon Valley was so far ahead of I mean, these. I don't know what the design time frame is for cars these days, but it could be years, 3-4 years.
Oh yeah.
Between design and release, so of course, you know, Gingerbread was probably current when they designed it. I'm sure it was. Google Plus is taking photos out August 1st. You will be compelled to use Google's new Photos app or Picasa, of all things. It's still around. What is going on with Google Plus? Are we slowly seeing it being torn asunder bit by bit?
I think it gets back to what we were talking about earlier in the show. Google's trying to do a lot of different things. A lot of people working on ways to make things better. And I just see confusion rather than anything else in the strategy. I mean, I'm disappointed to see this happen, to be quite honest.
I loved Google Plus. Do you guys feel like Google Plus is less than it used to be?
I'm probably using it less because there's not a lot of great tools. So like on Twitter, I can automatically have my articles posted and I keep looking up because that's where TweetDeck is. And there's, you know, 10,000 columns of people saying stuff. And with Google Plus, it's just a web page. So it's hard to keep track of and use and stuff like that. It's less useful because of how close off it is, which is weird for a Google thing. Usually they're not so kind of insulated in, no, don't touch our stuff. Don't have an API. Don't do any of that.
So yeah. I still find the most valuable engagement there on Google Plus, though.
Really?
Out of all the networks, I do. You know, and everybody's experience is obviously going to be different. But for the type of things I talk about and share and want to read about, great engagement.
Yeah, the comments are great. It's nice being able to do more than 180 characters or however much it is, because I'm wordy, I guess. But it's just harder to use. And it's nicer. I love the community, but it's the interface is tough to use. And it seems like it's only going to get worse as Google abandons it more and more and more as they kind of scale back. Like, I guess they wanted to brute force their way into social by building Google Plus and everything else. And they decided that's a bad idea. And now they're just stripping it out of everything slowly. And it's painful.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what else. Did you see the tweets from Erica Joy? I know you did, of course, because you follow all of this. She was an employee at Google, and Erica Baker, I'm sorry, and made a spreadsheet, which she shared, containing salary information. She says it spread like wildfire. She had a series of tweets on Twitter a couple of days ago. Spread like wildfire. Before I left, she's now at Slack. Before I left, about 5% of Googlers had shared their salary on that sheet. People asked for and got equitable pay based on data in the sheet. She wrote, the world didn't end. Everything didn't go up in flames because salary got shared. However, her manager didn't like it. She had to point out to her manager that it was illegal for the manager to punish an employee for sharing salary data. That's protected speech. However, apparently, I didn't know this, but Google has a little a personal bonusing feature. Any employee at Google can bonus any other employee $150 just because they did a good job, a little good job bonus. Her manager was blocking those, preventing her from receiving, she says, as many as 7 different bonuses from other Googlers. She said one got through because it was so vaguely worded. kind of an interesting story.
I wonder how big all of those numbers were.
Yeah, the spreadsheet. I guess the spreadsheet might be public.
Zeros.
I don't know if the spreadsheet is public. If you can,
I didn't see it. I looked for it briefly when I saw the story. I was obviously curious.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't so much to see how big the numbers were, but to see what the disparity was, perhaps between people basically do the same job or have the same title.
She said other Googlers started creating pivot tables to show how that was in fact happening, that some people were not getting paid appropriately.
It's Google's unquenchable thirst for data turned on itself, on the management.
Yeah.
When you just release all of this to your employees. And yeah, I'm sure they had all sorts of tables and charts and everything else.
It was really an interesting thing. She's talking about it now because she no longer works at Google, but she sounds like right. She was a little reluctant to be too public about this until after she left. But the peer bonuses not going through was not so good. All right. Let's see. Congratulations to Jason Howell. He's on vacation, by the way. Jason Kleanthis has been producing my shows for the last few days. And I think Brian Burnett is TDing. Yes, he is.
That's correct.
But Jason managed to nevertheless get into the world's attention with this post he put on Instagram. Jason's up in the mountains somewhere. But he posted a picture he found at his parents' house of him in kindergarten wearing apparently a T-shirt featuring the Playboy logo. And it made it to awkward family photos. Congratulations, Jason. You're a winner. That's really cute. I like the picture of Jason. He's a cutie.
That's great.
Poor Jason.
We're going to take a break. If you gentlemen have some suggestions, tips, or picks, inside information you'd like to share with us, we can do that in just a second. But first, a word from ZipRecruiter.com. If you're hiring, ZipRecruiter can make it a lot easier. Now, we all knew, of course, that the internet has changed hiring. I mean, these job boards make it a lot easier to both look for work and to look for an employee. But how do you know which job board's the right for you and the job that you're posting? ZipRecruiter simplifies it. You post to 100-plus job boards with a single click of the mouse, plus social networks like Twitter and Facebook. It is so slick. And as soon as you post, you're able to scan through 4 million current resumes that have been submitted to ZipRecruiter by people who are looking for work. And the beauty part is you're not going to get phone calls. You're not going to get emails in your inbox because ZipRecruiter's interface handles it all. You can quickly screen, rate, and hire. Within 24 hours, you'll have candidates rolling into ZipRecruiter's easy interface. No wonder more than 400,000 companies, including Twit, use ZipRecruiter. Melinda sent us an email. She says, quote, we've received several highly qualified candidates from ZipRecruiter. So happy our company signed up with them. We're excited to see what comes next. Thanks you so much for your customer helpline also. It's so very helpful. Well, thank you for your email, Melinda. That's nice. Nice to know. You could try it free right now, 4 days free at ZipRecruiter.com/twig. If you've got to do the hiring, let ZipRecruiter do the work. ZipRecruiter.com/twig for 4 days free. We thank them for their support of This Week in Google. Kevin Toefel is here now at ZDNet, where he's a contributing writer. Of course, we've known Kevin for a long time. Love him. His work at GigaOM. You were part of that. Jeez, that whole explosion there, the implosion of GigaOM.
I was actually, because I'm based in Pennsylvania, but I was actually at the office that day.
No.
For the I was. I was in San Francisco for the Apple Watch event. Yeah.
So yeah, that was the last story filed, wasn't it? The Apple Watch event, and then boom.
It was. It was the last story filed. It was mine. It's still there. So
that's kind of nice. So the site didn't go down?
No, the site did not go down. And the site has actually been purchased and is supposed to relaunch in August. Knowingly has purchased the company, or the, I'm sorry, the assets of the blog, that is. I mean,
but they're not going to rehire the staff.
Not to my knowledge.
Yeah.
Not to my knowledge.
But everybody seems like they've landed well. I know a number of number of folks went, including Matthew Ingram, went to Fortune.
Yes.
So I'm glad that I've seen Janko's work in Variety now.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you're at ZDNet. So I think that's great. But
absolutely. I mean, that's the best possible outcome is to see all of your colleagues, you know, land a job. And it's interesting. We had such a great group that we still talk almost every day as it is now. And it's 3-4 months later. So,
well, that's how that's how Twit started. After tech TV fell apart, mm-hmm. I still wanted to talk to all my colleagues. And if you have an organization with great people, it's inevitable that, you know, they land on their feet, I think. So, and boy, GigaOM had the best team ever. Just amazing.
It was nice.
Yeah. Yep. Any tip or trick or tool you'd like to share with us?
Well, the last time I was here, you and I talked a lot about my passion of the Beatles.
Yes, which I share.
Yes, which I know you share. So this time around, I didn't bring a tech tip. I brought a podcast that I hope you have not heard, because if you haven't, you are in for a treat. So if you or anybody else enjoys the Beatles, I would look at alphabetical.com. And it is four gentlemen who do one podcast per Beatles song. And they do it in alphabetical order. They are in the L's now, so they've been doing this for months and months. And just a lot of great insights to what was going on at the time and maybe some interesting facts about the song.
Such I love as that idea.
Lady Madonna, there was only one day of the week that wasn't mentioned, and turns out it was Saturday. I did not know that until I heard that episode. And
who would know?
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, you really have to be a Beatles diehard, obviously, but it's just an interesting approach to a podcast on a topic. And the same group of guys, they do another podcast about the Star Wars movies, where they literally each episode they talk about one single minute of the movie.
And
then the next podcast is the next minute of that movie.
Okay,
so
I was going to say, this sounds just like that, but it's the same people.
Star Wars Minute. Exactly. It's the same bunch of folks.
Hysterical.
So there's two good podcasts to listen to that you can really learn a lot of cool things and insights about.
I'm willing to say this is what podcasts were invented to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That is awesome. Just obsessive, passionate fandom. Nice. Alphabetical, alphabeticle,
or A-L.
A-L.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, of course, A-L, like alphabetical, with a beat in, a B in, no, alpha, B, with an E-A stuck in the middle.
Yes.
Okay, I like it. Ron Amadio, Ars Technica. We're waiting for your 8,500-word review of Android Car.
But yes, I hear that's coming Friday, maybe.
As we wait, you got anything else to share with us?
No.
Nope, not a thing, huh?
I don't know. Jason's off. I would get an email that says, hey, think about this.
Oh, I'm sorry. We didn't mean to jump you on that. Sorry.
No, I don't know. I'm excited.
You gave us one already, which was the cool thing in the maps. That shows your timeline. So I think I'm going to let you off the hook.
Okay.
For that one.
There's a Hearthstone expansion they announced while we're on the air. I don't know. I need to find out what that's
about. Are you a Hearthstoner?
That's super interesting. Yeah, I like playing, but more I like watching people on YouTube play and
you wait a minute. That's even worse. You're a
know,
Hearthstone
you
Let's
play
watcher.
But yeah, no, I don't know. I like. It's interesting.
I don't understand why you play a card game with a computer to me. I mean, I feel like, don't you want to... Is it possible to play Hearthstone as a card game? No.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah,
only
I think
digitally.
People have made physical cards. But no, man, like, you put a card down and, like, the whole screen shakes and catches fire.
Oh, that's neat.
And you know, they have all sorts of weird mechanics that wouldn't work in a real card game.
That makes sense.
So it's interesting. And you know, they constantly release new stuff, and it's...
Were you a World of Warcraft fanatic?
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's Warcraft, which I've always been super addicted to.
And, yeah. This is how I would do it, is watching YouTube videos. I think you're right. Because I don't want to... It's strategically so complicated. I just want to watch somebody play.
Right, yeah, but you learn about it.
I guess you do. Hey, well, who am I to mock you? I watch chess tournaments on TV.
Well, the worst is they're going to do a Warcraft movie now, live action.
Oh,
it's like, you know, humans versus orcs, and they're going to try to film this, and I don't know.
Did they never see the Halo movie then?
Oh.
Right, yeah. More video game movies that are going to be so incredibly awful.
I don't think we've seen the end of this trend either, frankly. Well, I shared my Google Fi, so I think I've shared something as well. So I think we can wrap this puppy up is what I think. I want to thank you both for being here. I appreciate it. Will Jeff be back next week? I'm sure he'll be back from his travels by then. Yeah. So I think we're getting close to the time when Gina Trapani stops by too. Every month she stops by. So we'll find out next week. We do This Week in Google, of course, every Wednesday right after Windows Weekly. That's round about 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern time, 20:30 UTC. Wednesdays on twit.tv. Please watch live. Join us in the chat room if you can. But if you can't, we can make on-demand versions available. Reluctantly, but okay. Audio and video available. No, I'm just kidding. In fact, that's how most of you listen. twit.tv/twig or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to Brian Burnett for filling in on the board. Thanks to Jason Kleanthis for filling in for Jason Howell. Where's your Playboy t-shirt? You need to have it. If you're going to really fill in for Jason, you have to have a Playboy t-shirt. and be 7 years old. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye, everybody.